You have found Authentic Business Adventures, the business program that brings you the struggles, stories, and triumphs and successes of business owners across the land. Past episodes of the Authentic Business Adventures program can be found on the podcast link at drawincustomers.com. We are coming to you from the Sun Prairie Community Radio Studios. Actually, what are we talking about? We're remote, so someday we'll get back in the studios. Underwritten by Bank of Sun Prairie. My name is James Kademan, entrepreneur, author, speaker, and helpful coach to small business owners across the country. Today, we're welcoming slash preparing to learn from Ellen Barnard, the co-owner of a Woman's Touch Sexuality Resource Center. Ellen, how are you doing today?
I'm doing just fine, James. Glad to be here.
Well, I'm glad to have you. Can you tell me, I mean, in the name, I guess it kind of tells us, can you tell us what is the Woman's Touch Sexuality Resource Center?
So we are a store and education center focusing on products and information around sexual health and pleasure.
All right. That seems simple enough. So you have a physical store, like a physical retail shop. Okay. And where is that located at?
That is located on the Isthmus at 302 South Livingston Street, right behind MG&E, actually.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and, you know, very deliberately put ourselves right sort of as much in the middle of the community as possible so that we could be seen as not East Side, not West Side, just Madison.
You know, it's funny you say that because I came to Madison, I don't know, 20 years ago, and there was an interesting dynamic between East Side and West Side that I was like, I don't see much of a difference here. But apparently people that have been here for any length of time clearly did.
Yep. No, it is an interesting thing, and it's always been true. I've been here for 41 years. And, there's an East Side, West Side thing, and that's fine. And so when we originally decided to open the store, I really wanted to be someplace that everybody saw as central and easy to get to. And
sure.
So that's why we're in the middle.
I think you've accomplished it. That's cool.
So you
guys have been around for a while, it sounds like.
Yeah, we opened in October of 1996.
Holy cow. So what were you doing before this?
So I, right before that, for quite a while, I was a social worker working with a variety of different populations, primarily people with physical and developmental disabilities and the elderly.
Okay.
And I had the most previous thing I had done was to run a nonprofit organization that provided in-home services to people with severe disabilities needing support. So that was what I was doing, and my co-owner, who is a physician, had just finished her training in epidemiology. So she's really happy right now because all of everything she's ever learned is happening around us. I am less happy, but, you know, scientists are like that. And she had pretty much decided that the state of healthcare was not something that worked for her, so she was casting about and not sure what to do, and we joined forces to do this thing that I had decided to do, and she was just like, well, I don't know, whatever, I'll do something, you know, and so she joined me, and here we are 24 years later.
So did you guys know each other before you started the business?
Yeah, we were neighbors, and we did know each other, and so, you know, didn't know each other that well. I'll tell you certainly learn a lot about somebody when you're running a business.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, we had developed a friendship, and ultimately we are now partners. So we have both of those interesting things happening for us. And, you know, my advice is be very careful about starting a business with a partner. You can do it, but you got to be ready for all the challenges. And that means kind of multiple challenges beyond just running a business.
Sure.
Because, man, do you have to have good communication skills and all that. But anyway,
sure.
So we did know each other. And but, you know, funny pieces of this story are neither of us had ever run a for-profit business.
All right.
I had run a nonprofit, so I sort of understood budgeting and things like that, but really didn't understand the differences between for-profit and nonprofit until we got going.
Sure.
And we basically just said, the Midwest needs this, so we're just going to do it, which is kind of the story of what I do anyway.
Sure.
You know, I see a need, and I say, and that was my career before this. I see a need, and I'm like, gosh, nobody is filling that need. I guess it's my job. And so I went ahead and said, well, okay, we don't have anything like this in the Midwest, and it needs to happen. And so, sure, why not? And so there we went.
All right.
You know, and she basically looked at it as, I'm going to run this like a science experiment and keep a lot of data, which is a really great way to run a business. And in fact, our accountant was really impressed because our accountant was like, boy, normally people don't like watch the data every day, and that's what you guys are doing. And, you know, most people kind of go quarter by quarter. And if we had done that, there were times when we would have died very fast.
Sure.
Well, you know, especially startup businesses, if you're not watching everything, your cash flow, all of your inventory management strategies, everything else, you can get into trouble before you even know it. And if you're
very
just
quickly.
Looking at quarterly financials and information from your accountant, it could be too late.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so instead, we had it all set up on spreadsheets and looked at everything every day, so that we knew what was going on. We didn't, you know, you never can predict anything in business, especially
right.
not retail. Retail is like, we would look at retail patterns, like, you know, we used to have jokes about never evaluate the business on a Tuesday because Tuesdays used to be dead, but then that changed, right? So, and then we would talk about, you know, the scientist in her would say, you know, you just can't predict anything. It's a little bit like Brownian motion, which is the motion of cells in a petri dish, and it's unpredictable
sure.
and random. And so we used to joke about brownies in motion on those days when we would be like, what is happening here? Why are all those people coming in? Or why is nobody coming in?
Sure.
So we had a very scientific approach to the business, which helped us tremendously.
So I want to talk, man, I got so many questions that I want to ask you. The first one, though, is you opened up a retail store in something that has to be a little bit challenging, right? Just sexuality as a whole. There's a lot of people that get excited. They're like, not in my backyard and all that kind of stuff. So is that a challenge in itself?
You know, that wasn't. That is the one thing that I will say, the only challenge we didn't have was we never got pushback from anybody. Now, we did it really carefully. I had been a sex educator for my whole career, so I wasn't uncomfortable with the topic. But what I did was, when we were looking for space, we went right to the places that we wanted to rent from, the people we wanted to rent from, and said, straight up, this is what we're doing. This is how the city, we looked at how the city would license it, which is just as a gift shop. The city didn't have specific licensing for us.
Okay.
And we said, this is what we're going to do. This is what we think our audience is. And they were fine about it. There was a daycare center next door to the space where we first opened, which was on the corner of Blair and Williamson. And we went right to the daycare, and we were like, just so you know, we want you to know this is coming. Do you have any concerns? And we had conversations before we opened. And that's really the key. That's a key for, you know, if you're in Madison and you want to open a business, that's what you do.
Right.
You talk to the neighbors. You make sure that if people have questions, they get their questions answered one-on-one.
Sure.
Not get blindsided, because that's when the NIMBY stuff happens. You know, when people are like, I know nothing about this and here are my fears, that's when you get that response. And
right.
I didn't want that response. I wanted people to know what we were doing, why we were doing it, and how we were doing it, and that we were two professionals who were going about this as professionals, not trying to do anything, anything to play on taboo or shame. And
sure.
I think that was really, it was really key. And, you know, we went to the daycare folks and they were like, yay, I can't wait till it opens. Let's, so we can go shopping there. And I was like, well, okay, that's good.
Check that box. We're all solved.
Yeah. And literally, we never got any pushback on that level. So
that's cool.
And in fact, the, you know, as soon as we opened up, it took a while, right, to get the word out, mm-hmm. as all new businesses struggle with. But as the word got out there, we had a lot of people coming in. You know, I remember one of the first quotes we wrote down. We used to write quotes down that were particularly meaningful to us. And one of the first quotes we got was a man who walked in and he said, "Oh, thank you so much for opening this shop. It makes me feel like I'm okay for wanting to have sex with my wife." And I was like, yay, that's, right. you know, goal achieved. Because our goal was to make it, normalize it and make it feel right. like it's okay. And it's not shameful and it's not something to skulk around and be, you know, to hide. And, you know, so that was super important to us, to be really just like calm, cool, professional.
Sure.
And here
sure.
we are.
Sure.
And so that was how we approached it. And that was why I think we did well. You know, within we were pretty busy within 6 months of opening. Within that, yeah. You know, what happened was we started offering little classes, and I put a notice in a little free section of Isthmus when they had that section and listing our free classes, because they were free classes. And
sure.
one of the reporters picked up on it and did a story on us early on within the first 6 months, and that was what helped us get noticed by the community.
Very cool.
So that by the, I mean, that happened, let's see. So that story hit in November, so we'd been open a month and a half, and we were getting pretty steady business at that point. And by Valentine's the following year, we were definitely as busy as we could handle.
That's awesome. That's incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, and truthfully, so here's the fun stories part. We started this business with no money. I mean, we literally, nobody would give us money. It's not a topic. So with the SBA, another thing that caught your eye about us was the SBA has had a clause that said they will not do guarantees for loans to any business that sells products or services that appeal to, quote unquote, prurient sexual interests.
That's crazy.
And so when we went to the banks, they were like, nope, can't. And we went to what was the Madison Development Corporation at the time, and we were like, please help us. And they were like, no, this is going to fail. It was a guy, and he was like, this isn't a successful business model. You're going to fail. We can't give you money. And like, we were
asking
for $25,000. Seriously. So that's why I say we were doing really well by first 6 months, because we were like, well, so much for not succeeding, right?
Sure.
And so what finally happened was we found one woman banker in town, because there weren't that many women bankers at the time, who
sure.
was willing to give us a home equity loan for $20,000.
All right.
Because that was her limit before she had to go to committee.
Oh, all right.
And so she was the VP of the bank. She could personally approve that much money. And so she gave us a home equity loan. And that's how we got started. We literally got started with that and $15,000 of our own money to get inventory and stuff going, which is nothing. I mean, the store was so bare compared to what it is now.
Sure.
But we made it, you know, and we used that $35,000 to get started in. Golly, were we lucky that we were successful? Because you know how you talk about startups should have a full year of operating expenses in the bank before you open to cover all of your needs as your cash flow goes up and down. Well, we certainly didn't have that.
No, I think that's good in theory, but I don't know of any business owner that I can think of that has ever had that.
No, and many of them suffer because of it, right? That's one of the
ways
that
businesses
fail. Yeah.
Yeah, lack of cash flow,
you know,
lack of capital. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And so we were both also working outside of the business, which helped. And we developed strong relationships. So the other owner started working with an AIDS service organization in town at the time, and did a whole training program for them, which helped bring some extra income in as we were getting started. And we both worked outside the business halftime for the first year to make sure that we had enough to live on. I mean, we both brought about $12,000 a year in as income for our first year.
Sure.
And none of it was
business
from the business
or individually?
None of it was from the business. We didn't take any draws from the business.
Okay.
We lived on our part-time work outside of the business for the first year.
Gotcha. Okay.
Which is another thing that I tell people. I used to get a lot of calls from people wanting to start businesses, and now I think that they don't want to do it anymore. But one of the things I tell them is don't expect to draw a salary right away. Don't expect, you know, you have to really understand the first year is tough.
Yeah.
And you got to be tough with it. You can't panic, and you got to just, you know, one of my features is I keep, you know, steady moving forward, even when it looks like it's crazy, super crazy, I will bail. But we had enough successes, and we had enough people coming in telling us how important it was, and enough, you know, by the end of the first year, we started getting requests to do public speaking for educational purposes. We had healthcare providers who, as soon as they heard about us, started sending people to us, because healthcare providers get no training in sexual health. None.
Really?
There's no training in medical school. And in fact, by year three, the medical school was having us do trainings for their residents and med students.
Wow.
Because, and which we did for free, right? So that's all our publicity has always been reaching out to the healthcare community and supporting their work for free so that they make referrals to us. And that's how we've gotten most of our business. We tried advertising. It just didn't fly. People didn't understand it. It didn't make sense to them. They didn't know what we were. They just kept thinking we were Red Letter News, and that doesn't help. And so instead we adopted this strategy where we would do educational presentations. We developed educational materials that we would send out to that we still send out to healthcare providers for free so they could have information to give their patients. We had sourced a product from the UK that wasn't easily available in the US. It was a personal lubricant, and it was so much better than the stuff that was currently available that we started ordering large quantities of samples and sending them out to healthcare providers to give to their patients for free along with our business card. And that was our major advertising. And that's how it worked great. And in 1997, early 1997, I think by Valentine's, no, I think it was by July, we had a website with e-commerce.
Oh, you did? 97.
Yeah, 97. So we were early, early e-commerce folks.
Way early, yeah.
And quite honestly, until 2000, that website generated 30 to 40% of our income steadily, and was probably one of the reasons we succeeded as well as we did.
Wow.
And then Amazon came along and crushed us.
Sure.
Literally. I mean, it's really true.
You can see the data. You're the first business ever of that story, right?
Yeah, right. You can see the data about when Amazon premiered and started undercutting retailers, and there
right.
it was.
Sure.
But so we were online. We started sending these samples out all over the country. We started going to professional medical conferences and doing workshops and getting our mailing list together for healthcare providers who wanted samples, and grew this whole aspect of the business. So we were doing the retail store, and then started ordering this product in bulk from the UK and worked very hard with these people for the longest time. They have the most crazy owner in the world. No, he's actually an alcoholic, which is really the problem.
Oh, no.
But, oh, yeah, well, that will come into this story.
Sure.
So we built this business up, and so then we decided to open a wholesale distribution arm to handle bulk orders of these two products from this UK manufacturer. And in fact, got to the point by 2003 where we were shipping in container loads and selling it around the country to distributors and healthcare clinics and pharmacies, and had built that up so that our retail store was doing well, but that business at its peak was a $2 million a year revenue.
You're kidding. Holy cow.
And then the rest of the story goes.
And then,
there's two parts of this story. So while we were doing, really well, and so we decided we had developed a protocol for maintaining vaginal health for postmenopausal women and cancer survivors during this time. It was part of the work that we had been doing, and we had designed a medical device that would do this work because we couldn't find anything on the market that did it. And so we started financing that, the production of the, or the development of that medical device through the proceeds of this wholesale business.
Okay.
And got about $675,000 in when, on July 23rd, 2014, the FDA turned away our containers, two container loads at customs, because the manufacturer who had been trying to get to do what the FDA wanted, manufacturer had refused to do the testing required. And so that business died that day.
Oh.
So, ouch. And it is a big ouch. It is the story of make sure your stool has at least three legs, because our stool only had two at that day. And we almost failed everything.
Wow.
So we had, this is a story that we've told it in bits and pieces to people. Nobody really knows it, but it's an amazing story if you kind of follow it.
Well, it sounds like it.
And so at that moment in time, what we had was we had the design and we had tooling and we had everything ready and set to start manufacturing this medical device.
All right.
But we didn't have any money to do the first run.
Oh.
And so we had a huge dilemma. The retail store was percolating along, doing just fine, but wasn't going to generate the kind of income that we were going to need for this.
Right.
And so we made a calculated decision. It was a huge risk, and our bank was willing to work with us. And our bank extended the line of credit that we had for the lubricant purchases to the manufacturing of the medical devices to allow us to get the first couple runs. The problem, of course, was all of the marketing money that we were counting on from this wholesale business wasn't going to be there.
Oh,
and so
sure.
It's going to be all word of mouth marketing from there, which is really hard to do. It's really slow.
Yeah. Right.
It isn't that it doesn't work, but it's really slow. And so we were crossing our fingers, hoping it would work, and went along for quite a few years, manufacturing, word of mouth, doing everything we could to teach. We were doing a lot of teaching and a lot of work. And then finally the bank said, you know, we're going to have to convert this loan to a term loan.
Oh.
And it was hugely painful, but they were right. You know, we knew it was going to happen that way.
Sure.
And so our house went on the line.
Okay.
And we struggled for a long time, and it really drained all of our resources for the longest time. We cut our staff back. We did a whole lot of other work to make sure that we could meet our expenses. And a couple years ago, I guess it was last year, at the beginning of last year, we hit the point where we really weren't, all of our projections that we had hoped to have didn't come true. And we were at a point where we weren't going to be able to make the payments on this loan. But fortunately, the retail store had been profitable for now, after that, for 2 years, 3 years, really well. We'd rebounded from the recession and everything else. And so we were able to refinance our house to finance the business loan. Because business loans are a problem because they have really short terms. Right.
Yeah.
This is a 5-year term on this business loan. So the payment terms were huge. It was $6,500 a month that we had to pay on this loan. And we just couldn't do it.
Sure.
So yay for the bank. Refinance the loan into our house. Boo for our house.
Right.
Because now it's all back to, you know, we've got 30% equity again. Boo hoo.
Sure.
But we survived.
Numbers on paper,
it.
Right?
It is, well, at this point, yeah, there's nothing, you know, it was that or lose the business and lose the house, right?
Sure,
the
yeah, not a fan. Not a fan.
No, and we love our house. So, you know, again, this I tell this story in this way because it's not an unusual business story. It is a story of the risks you take, the calculated risks you take when you take loans, the projects that go sideways in ways you don't expect. The cool thing is that this medical device has been embraced by doctors more and more. And if we ever had the money to market, it would blow up. Now, we can't afford to have it blow up now because we don't have enough money to fund the manufacturing to blow it up.
Sure.
But the good news is it's stable, it's steady, there's a continual demand. I mean, we get orders. If the store were open right now, we would be selling 2 to 3 of them a day in the store, as well as selling 2 to 3 of them, maybe up to 10 a day online.
Wow.
Yeah, and it could be much more than that, but again, you know, we don't have the funding, and we aren't in a stable enough place to do something like get investment, because the retail store, you know, retail's changed a lot, and
it has.
So I am having to work more in the retail than on the business, and if that's true, then that means I can't go for investments.
Sure.
Because, of course, a founder has to be available for investors to make sure the investment goes. And
right.
So we know, you know, here we are, this teeny little business. I mean, when we were open, we had 4 full-time and 4 part-time staff. And, you know, that's probably about what we need to operate.
Sure.
And we're doing fine. And we were actually until March 16th when we closed the store.
Yeah,
we were profitable on everything.
Yeah.
It's a hard laugh. My heart is breaking right now because we were profitable. We had begun to put some cash aside to try to fund some more outreach, to do some more work, and then boom, here we are. And of course, as you know, we applied for the federal money before the day it opened. We knew what it was going to take, so we got everything into our bank, and our banker said, sorry, we can't do it. They won't let us.
Dang.
And so I put that out on Facebook, and I said, well, folks, you know, we need people to step up and help us. And we got a nice bounce. We're going to need to keep doing that kind of work and that kind of stuff, because I've applied for 6 more grants, and all of them have been turned down due to too high of a demand.
Okay.
You know, I applied for one small grant for $5,000 for women-owned businesses and got the note back of, thank you so much. We've had 50,000 applications for 1,000 slots. You know, okay,
yeah.
There you go. So that's the need right now. And we are in this crazy, unusual circumstance. I totally get it. And we're just kind of one foot in front of the other, hoping we can make it. To the end of this, really needing to figure, you know, hoping we can continue to pay our fixed expenses, which we're not paying ourselves. We can't pay ourselves.
Sure.
So we're hoping to get unemployment if it ever comes through.
Right.
And we're allowing the whatever revenues we get in to go to pay for rent and utilities and the things we can't say no to or don't want to say no to. You know, we could defer the rent, but that doesn't help us.
No. It's just kicking the can down the road.
Yeah, it is. And so, you know, we have a line of credit, but again, we're kicking it down the road. If we have to take it, we'll take it.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, because we don't want to close. The sweet thing about this whole experience is how many people have contacted us saying, you guys are so important to the world, we can't let you fail.
Right.
You know, and that has helped tremendously. On the days when we're really despairing, to get those notes makes me say, okay, right, we got to keep going because we have to reopen eventually.
Well, sure, it gives you a reason, a reason to do it, right, or justifies the pain, I guess.
Yeah. So that's our story, you know, that's our crazy story.
It's still going, that's cool.
We're still going. You know, I will say we have a plan, you know, we're both 60, so we're getting up there, not really, but enough. And
sure.
So before this all happened, we were going to start putting it out there to look for somebody to take over the business in 3 to 5 years.
Okay.
We still would like to do that, but obviously our finances are going to look really different.
All right.
You know, who's going to buy a business with a year like this? Because you know we'll have a big loss. I mean, how could we not?
I don't think you're alone.
I know, but that doesn't matter when somebody's looking to buy a business, you know?
Sure. Well, yeah, I guess it would depend on the buyer. Because you got over 2 decades of history to look at, so
it's
a long
true.
Time.
And you know, and this big depth of reach. So, you know, but we do know that it does mean that this year isn't the year to start doing that. Next year won't be the year to start thinking
sure.
about it.
Right.
Just because, you know, it is 25 or so years of doing this is great, and we love it. You know, I'm going to still do sex education because I adore doing it. But it's, you know, it's time for somebody younger and fresher to take it over and make sure it's staying relevant and being more relevant to people. Maybe we, you know, you get your blind spots when you've been in business a long time. And I'm sure mm-hmm. we have them.
Sure. Well, we all do.
And I would love to have one or two people with fresh eyes come in and say, yay, this is doing great, but these are the other ways it could be doing work.
Sure.
And make sure that this business stays relevant, you know, for decades to come, because
right.
because people do value it, and it is important, and it is filling a gap in the world that still isn't being filled by anybody else. I mean, we're literally the only business like this in the whole country.
Are you really?
Yeah. I mean, there are other nice couples-friendly stores, but
sure.
nobody with the expertise that we have, nobody that can take a person whose doctor sends them in with questions and actually answer them with accuracy and understanding both the medical and the psychosocial aspects of what their question implies.
Sure.
And that's it's a completely unique skill set that we have brought to the world.
Huh. That is cool. So
Thank you. You
raise an interesting point. I guess you got a perfect segue for me because I wanted to ask you about competition. When I first came across your business name, A Woman's Touch Sexuality Resource Center, I thought, oh, is this a school or what is this thing, right?
Mm-hmm,
and then
right.
I poked around a little more and I'm like, oh, it's a retail store online, got it, lots of classes, all that jazz. Like, there's a ton of stuff that you offer. So then me just coming from the, I guess I'm a business owner as well, so I always look at it from a business aspect. I think, well, who else is doing this? There has to be somebody else. So,
nope.
Especially with something like sexuality, I mean, that's a thing. So,
yeah, that
can you
is
tell
a
me
thing.
About your, can you tell me about the competition, whether, I guess, as perceived by you and your clients?
Sure. You know, unfortunately, when people come in and say, oh, that's really great, thanks for letting me try this on my hand and see what it sounds like, but I'm going to go to Amazon because it's cheaper. That's our competition. That's
right,
what happens there. All the time. You
really?
Know, we sell a beautifully curated selection of books, and what they do is they take a picture of the book and they go buy it somewhere else. So that's really our competition.
Sure. Okay.
Now, there are stores that locally pose some competition to us. You know, there's a store in Minneapolis, and there's a store in D.C., well, in Baltimore, and there's some stores, you know, in Boston, New York City, Seattle, Portland,
sure.
San Francisco, that are sort of competitors in the, they would label themselves as feminist sex shops. And so in the broad way that we are also that, they are competitors.
Okay.
But they don't do the depth of education. And if somebody came in asking about cancer treatment side effects on their sexuality, they wouldn't be able to answer the questions. And people know that. And people know that all over the country. We get referrals from physicians or healthcare providers and sex therapists from the whole country and
wow.
internationally. And it's because they know that I'm on the other end of the phone and I can actually answer the question in a way that will be helpful,
sure.
accurate, and address the underlying issues, physical issues that are happening. And there isn't anyone else that we know of that can actually do that. And so we are a completely unique business. We compete on the level of the fun things with
sure.
other people. But for the most part, the little shops like ours are just as expensive because they have to be, because it takes a lot to offer a brick and mortar store to staff it.
Sure.
You know, and the people who are competing with us on Amazon are drop shipping and running them out of their garages, mostly drop shipping. You know,
sure.
the thing that's also very frustrating to me is that many of our distributors drop ship now.
Okay.
And so people use their warehouses. And so there's no fixed cost. There's no overhead.
Sure.
And so on the level of I'm just looking for that brand of something, we can never compete in price. But on the level of I have a question that needs answering or 10 questions that need answering, or I don't know which one to get and I can't figure it out, will you help me? We have nobody that competes that can beat us. They can compete.
Okay.
Some of them can compete on the level of this is what this product does, you know, but
sure.
Nobody can compete on the level of if you're struggling with these kinds of dysfunctions, these are the things you can do to overcome them. And that's our niche.
All right.
And it's something we do that nobody else can do.
Sure. Wow.
Or they do it wrong. I see it all the time. They get the information completely wrong.
Really?
Yeah.
All right.
You know, the problem is, right, so sex education in the U.S. is very poor. There's more mythology taught and pop culture stuff. I mean, if you go just last week, I mean, this is crazy to me. Just last week, there was an article in Cosmo that got picked up and re-mentioned by the Washington Post about how they have finally proven that there is no such thing as a G-spot. We have been saying this for 24 years.
All right.
We knew physiologically there's no such thing. The doc here, you know, the doc co-owner was like, this doesn't make sense. This is ridiculous. And yet in pop culture, it still gets repeated constantly.
Sure.
And people talk about it like it is a thing and like it's something to look for and like it's something to even think about.
Right.
And yet it isn't a thing. And so I still get people who talk about it and say, how do I find my, and what's the best product to help me find my? And I'm like, whoa, let's step back. Let's reframe this to understand there is no such thing. And that's, you know, wow. We really thought 24 years in that maybe the conversation would start changing. Last week it started changing. That's amazing.
That is amazing. That I believe that you just blew the minds of about 500 listeners right there.
Good. I'm glad. And maybe they blew the minds of three of their friends as well.
That is cool.
So,
or not cool. I don't know if that's good news or bad news.
Well, it's good news because what it means is all these people who thought there was something they were supposed to be doing and they thought they were doing it wrong weren't doing anything wrong.
All right.
And that's what I love about our business is our business gets to tell people all the time, there's nothing wrong with you. You are normal. Because there's nowhere else to learn that in our culture.
Sure. No.
And there's nobody you can ask. How many times postmenopausal women come into the store every day and say, there's something wrong with me. And I talk them through and I listen and I say, no, there's nothing wrong with you. There are 55 million other women in the U.S. that are having the same problems. And they're like, what? Why doesn't anybody talk about it? My friends never talk about it. I don't hear anything about it. So, you know, we're so embarrassed to talk about the topic that we don't.
Mm-hmm.
And so then we have increasing shame when something seems like it's wrong and we think we're the only one. And so one of the things our business gets to do, and the feminist sex shops sometimes do this in different ways, but what we do on all those aspects is to say there's nothing wrong with you. There's nothing abnormal, and you have a lot of company, and here are the things you can do about it. And that's it's a very intensive business model. It is the challenge for us. It's hard to find staff who can do that kind of work with us. It's one of the reasons I spend so much time working in the business is because it is hard to find staff who can actually handle that complexity. Sometimes we have them, sometimes we don't. We have a couple of people who are just amazing and truly get it and have been doing good work with us on that in that respect, but it is also why we're completely unique and why we are valuable to the world.
Right. I was just going to ask you, actually, perfect segue again about staff, because you mentioned that you had employees almost right away. Is that correct? 24 years ago.
We did within within the first 6 months we had employees. Yes.
Okay. So I want to talk about that because that's a can of worms.
Oh, yeah.
One, just hiring employees at all that show up for work, let alone employees that are comfortable enough and knowledgeable enough to answer questions and help your customers.
Yep.
So how do you train them for something like this?
Yeah, so we have a really in-depth training that starts with anatomy and physiology and some of the underlying information that we have to undo, because people come in with all of that misinformation about sex and sexuality. And so we give them a good basis. And then it's really, it's kind of an apprenticeship model in terms of how we handle it. So they, I work side by side with them out in the store, modeling and practicing and listening and helping them understand how, well, you know, I've got it, you know, it took us a long time, obviously, and we do know, we know essentially the qualities that work best for us. We can't always get those. And, you know, one of the things that has changed in the last few years is that with pretty much full employment, it's much harder to get anybody to work, much less skilled people, and, you know, and to be able to pay what people deserve in a retail setting is very difficult. That's one of the reasons we skinnied down our staff, is so that we could pay better.
Okay.
Because I feel like that's an important thing to do, is to have better paid people if we can.
Sure.
And so it's a really slow, careful process, and it's literally an apprenticeship process where they work side by side, and then we slowly pull back when we know that they can answer the questions with the bullet points that we've taught them, and that they know when to say, I can't answer that question, my supervisor or my boss or however they call me can answer that. They're not available right now. Let's take your contact information and I'll have them contact you, which is the only way I ever get time off, right? because otherwise I'd be there. I'd have to be there all the time. But fortunately, people understand and they're like, oh, sure, of course. That's a complicated question. Okay. And, you know, as long as somebody gets back to them, they're happy.
Sure.
So we've really kind of figured that out. How do we teach the basic skills to operate the store? And all of the, you know, it's a fairly fussy way. We do a lot to make sure people are happy and that they get products that they want and that will work for them as much as possible, because we can't take returns. You know, I can't have somebody take something home and then come back and say, I didn't like this, I want to return it, because I'm sorry, it's a personal use thing.
Yeah, I got and weird.
Nobody wants to buy that.
Right.
And we don't have the margin to absorb that. So.
Sure.
So we do have to have staff that can help people make smart decisions in the first place. And I tell all of our staff, you have my permission to send somebody home and not buy anything if they push you to say, what should I get, and won't make their own decision. Because if they won't make their own decision, they won't take responsibility for what they get. And then when they're unhappy, they'll hold us responsible.
That seems to be a common thing around here. People just not taking responsibility for some of their purchases and stuff like that, or just anything.
Oh,
really.
Yeah. Well, and again, Amazon allows you to return almost anything.
Sure, sure.
So we've got we have a culture that has encouraged crazy responsibility around returns. Oh, I'll just buy it. If I don't like it, I'll return it. And we can't do that. It's just not acceptable. And so instead, we have a fairly intensive process, which is one of the reasons why it's going to be hard for us to reopen quickly. And we don't expect that we are a business that can reopen soon, because it's one-on-one and it's people trying things, you know, trying products on their hands to see how they feel and how they smell and how they taste, if it's a tasty thing, and trying things that have motors to see how they operate. And so it's all hands-on and it's all interactive.
Sure.
And, you know, that with this crazy virus, that means we're really not going to be able to open up until we have a good strategy for keeping everybody safe, particularly our staff.
Sure. Okay.
But also not having customers spreading the virus to each other in the store, not even just by being in the store together, but hand to product to hand transmission.
Sure.
You know, do I expect that we're going to be asking everybody we'll be handing out gloves and making sure people have masks when we finally reopen? Yes, we will. We will have to, because we don't want to be responsible for spreading this virus. And this virus likes to spread as it is. It's crazy that way.
Sure.
So you know, we expect if when we reopen, it will be later in the summer, not sooner. And when we have a good sense of how do we control the environment, how do we control the spread, are people getting enough tests, are people knowing what to do, are we actually able to keep it safe? Because I have a strong sense of responsibility that our job is to make sure that people get what they want, but doing so in a safe way, right?
Right.
That's our philosophy.
That's fair.
So, that's and in fair. The meantime, here we are doing curbside pickup and phone and website and hoping that that, you know, continues so that we can still meet people's needs and get our needs met in terms of paying our bills,
right.
But also to do it super safely, which
All
is
right.
just so important.
Sure. That's fair. That's super fair. Can you tell me, you mentioned all the products and types of products, and I imagine it's a job just to figure out what products you're going to have available to sell. How do you figure that out?
You know, some of it is, you know, it's such a great question because I do realize that I think we analyze a lot of things. We do everything, like when we're looking at stuff that people use on their body, either for massage or personal lubricants or flavored things or whatever, we look at the ingredients and we want to make sure they're safe, first of all, and that they make sense and that they're good quality. We really are, so we only sell high quality things. It's one of our things that we started with, and I don't like to sell crap.
Sure. Smart.
And I like to be able to, I want to live with myself.
Right.
What are the ingredients? How does it work? Does it make sense or not make sense for people? So I go from a function perspective first. So there are some shops like ours, they just buy everything new. Doesn't matter if it really makes sense to use it or not, or how easy it is to use, or any quality or anything. And we don't do that. I screen everything. I review everything. I have product touchers when I need them. If I can't figure out, is this really going to make sense? Especially people who have, penises. I don't have a penis. I can't figure that out. So I need to find somebody who can play with this thing to tell me if it, does it work? Maybe it doesn't.
All right.
And so we assess it for function, we assess it for safety, and then we assess it for, is this a reasonably priced thing? So I tell people a lot, I tell my suppliers when they're like trying to push high end and luxury items, I'm like, we're in Wisconsin. Think Midwestern practical guys. So no, I'm not going to carry something super expensive just because it's cool.
Right.
I'm not about cool. You know, if somebody wants to run this business about cool, that's fine, but that's not how I'm going to run it.
Sure.
So it has to function well, and it has to be affordable. And, like, it can't die in the first 30 days, right? So does it have a good warranty?
Sure.
You know, does it have a decent warranty from the manufacturer? Or is it super cheap? And I tell people, listen, this is going to last weeks, not years. Or months, not years. So really all about being really careful. I try to be really thoughtful. We both try to be really, all of us, in fact, all of us have long conversations. Does this make sense in use? Is it a reasonable price? Does it seem like something that's meeting a need that we don't currently meet or doesn't, or meets a need that we know there's a lot of, that people want a variety in that segment? And it's just, you know, the thing about having two professionals doing this is we're really good at analyzing, right? We look at data. We look at patterns. The advantage of working in the store is I listen to what people say about things and what they tell me they're looking for and what works best for them.
Sure.
And so all of that comes into my buying. And, you know, I use the data from our point of sale to look at sales figures. And then I consider, you know, and I'm looking at stuff all the time as they come out with new things. We used to go to trade shows, just not really worth it anymore because mostly it's 95% garbage. And I also have a really good relationship with a couple of my distributors where when I call them and I say, will you send me a review sample? They say, sure, and they send it out. And
all
they send me free samples. They send me free samples that I can review and decide, does it make sense? Is this worth it? Some of my suppliers I trust to tell me more about things so that I can say, should I even look at this? And I have a couple of folks who will say, no, don't bother. It's really not worth it.
Right.
And I also have suppliers who ask me, like I've had suppliers repeatedly ask me, what do you think about these products with CBD in them? And, you know, and I've been able to say they're complete garbage. So
oh, wow.
You can sell
okay.
them. Oh, they're
sure.
complete garbage. No data. There's no reason. But, you know, if you want to sell them, understand you're selling them because of the marketing hype and you're going to make money, but you're not making a difference in people's lives.
Sure.
And
right.
over and over again, we make the decision not to carry something just because we're going to make a ton of dollars on it. I could carry sure. CBD products and I promise you I'd make money on it, but I would not be able to sleep with myself because I would know that I'm not doing any good in the world with it.
That's fair. That's admirable. That's extremely admirable.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you know, this is the thing. I mean, we're probably way poorer because of it, but it's
sure.
that, you know, we are socially responsible business that way. We really see it that way. And I have to, ultimately, this is about how I'm leaving the world, not how I'm making more money and spending it, because I have enough money most of the time. This year is going to be a challenge, but, you know, I have enough money to live on. I have enough money to give to the charities I believe in.
Sure.
And so it's about being, you know, for me, as long as I'm stable and able to meet my bills and not, you know, so far we've been able to, you know, paying for our health insurance is tremendously expensive.
It's insane. Yeah.
Oh, it's insane. Well, and as you know, think about being 60 years old. It's crazy. It's about, for really good coverage, we're paying $1,000 a month each. And that's, I know. I'm like, can I please go on Medicare any day now, please?
Sure.
Because it's just nuts. But until that's possible,
right?
We need to have good health insurance because the last thing we can have happen is to get sick and not be able to take care of it.
Sure.
And you know, when you're our age, you're really aware of that.
Sure. That's fair. That's totally fair.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We're almost out of time here. Ellen, can you tell me just really quick a piece of advice that you have learned since running the business for 24 years that you would give to someone that was considering starting a business of any kind?
Wow.
That's just a small question, right?
I always tell people, well, this is the biggest piece of advice, actually, that I tell everybody. The all thing right. that I've learned is you can't do it all.
Uh-huh.
So startups in particular, entrepreneurs think that they can do every aspect of the business and they should do it. And they try to do all of the things for the business. And the truth is we don't have the skills. We developed this conception of skills you need to have to do anything successfully. And there are three skills. You need to have vision. You need to have somebody who can take the vision and put it on paper and develop a map. And then you need to have the people, you need someone who can do the very concrete tasks of the day-to-day. And not anybody has all three of those strongly.
Sure.
Many
sure.
of us have one or two, but never three. And so you got to make sure you know where you're going to get all three of those things done and who's going to do it for you. And I learned this actually when I developed a nonprofit commercial kitchen here in Madison, and I was stuck trying to figure out why our team wasn't getting farther. And it was when we came up with this analysis, and I had to get a couple of people around. I had all what we call rocks, the people who do the day-to-day, and I had nobody who could map it out and get something done from vision to end, and needed to fill in those gaps. And so find people who can do those things with you. Don't expect you can do them yourself because you can't. And you're going to avoid the things that you're not good at, and that will be your failing.
Sure. That is a genius answer. That may be one of the best answers I've gotten to that question.
Well, thank you. Well, you know, if we had time to write the book about that one, we would.
Yeah, right. It's been a couple of years.
Yeah, exactly.
Awesome. Well, Ellen, thank you so much for being on the show. I feel like I could talk to you for another 2 or 3 hours, but we are pretty much out of time here.
All right. Well, thank you for including me, and good luck to you and your show.
Yeah. We got, you know, the thing is, it's free to listen, so... We
I understand.
If we can't get listeners, we're doing something wrong.
Yeah, I hear you. All right. Well, thank you.
Cool enough. Thank you, Ellen.
And you take care.
You too. This has been Authentic Business Adventures, the business program that brings you the struggle stories and triumphant successes of business owners across the land. Coming to you normally from the Sun Prairie Community Studios, underwritten by Bank of Sun Prairie. Today, we happen to be wherever we are, in our offices or whatever. Ellen, I have no idea where you are, so I'm sure it's somewhere nice.
I'm currently at home, but I'm headed to work right now to
Good
do
enough.
What I got to do.
Good enough. If you're listening to this on the web, please like, subscribe, and share. My name is James Kademan, and Authentic Business Adventures is brought to you by Calls on Call, offering call answering and receptionist services for small businesses across the country on the web at callsoncall.com, as well as Draw-In Customers Business Coaching, offering business coaching services for entrepreneurs in all stages of their business on the web at drawincustomers.com. And of course, the Bold Business Book, a book for the entrepreneur and all of us, available on Amazon and wherever fine books are sold, especially wherever fine books are sold. We'd like to thank you, our wonderful listeners, as well as our guest, Ellen Barnard, co-owner of a Women's Touch Sexuality Resource Center. Ellen, could you do me a huge favor?
Yes.
Can you tell us a website where people can find you?
Yeah, so it's sexualityresources.com.
Sexualityresources.com, awesome. And then the address of your store for when it is open in the somewhat near future.
Well, or for pickup. You can pick up. 302 South Livingston Street in Madison, Wisconsin.
Awesome. Sounds very good. Ellen, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you, James. You take care.
You as well. Find us airing on 103.5 Wednesdays at 1 p.m., Sundays at 2 p.m., as well as at sunprairiemediacenter.com. Past episodes can be found morning, noon, and night at the podcast link, found at drawincustomers.com. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next week. I want you to stay awesome. And if you do nothing else, enjoy your business.